right, finally. Can you believe it? We're actually sitting in the studio recording a podcast.
Yeah. This took long time, yeah.
It did.
But this I don't know why.
It was really hard because just...
I don't remember why.
I don't know. This month is a... It's weird. Just maybe so much going on.
Nah, after Christmas? So, no?
Maybe. I don't know. Nobody's organized in January. Everybody's calling for appointments and then canceling them last minute and taking forever. But we're here now.
Yeah.
And it's actually a special date too, because exactly to the day a year ago today, the first episode of Hearst Case Scenario aired on Keith FM.
So it's an anniversary.
It's an anniversary episode. So the first, a year ago from the day we were recording, which is...
was it so
January
cold?
January 18th.
It wasn't so cold when we
So you're
started.
Listening to this 6 days later. No, it wasn't. It wasn't as cold, but it was exactly a year ago today. So let's kick off this episode.
Hearst Case Scenario.
Die Bestatterin.
Hello.
Hello and welcome, everybody. To this new episode of Hearst Case Scenario here on Keith FM.
Yeah.
Or possibly on Spotify. Wherever you're listening, we're glad you are. And we've been doing this for a year now. This is episode number 15. And it's been so much fun. And yeah, we love hearing back from you about what you want to hear about and what you think. So feel free to get in touch. And yeah, that being said, let's start this episode, which we want to use to talk about something that's, that's like a recent thing that's been happening and that's been on our minds a lot.
Yeah, very good friend as a funeral director. What? It's a strange thing to do. Yeah, that's what we are talking today, no? Because we had... a few weeks ago, like a friend of mine died. And as a funeral director, we did the all what we do normally for people we don't know. And it feel kind of, I don't know how it feel. I can't explain how it feel.
For me, I mean, I didn't know her... like she wasn't my friend, but for me it was also the first time handling someone in death that I knew
before. It's really is your first time? Okay.
Yeah, I mean it was not the first time I've seen someone dead alive, but the first time
as a funeral director.
But the first time as a funeral director handling someone, yeah.
It's strange because I think Magnolia started with a friend. The first case that I buried before you came in the spot was a friend, and her name was Tina.
Oh.
And now the second friend.
Also Tina.
Tina.
So if your name is Tina, you better not become friends with Helena. has a bad record.
Exactly.
She's going to bury you.
No, please, all the Tinas in the world, don't listen to Sarah. I love Tinas. But it's so strange. As I was driving here for the podcast, and I was thinking about this. As it struck me suddenly that they are Tinas.
Yeah.
It's the second Tinas. And they are the only friends that were buried from me.
Yeah.
As a funeral director, as a friend, as in a funeral director. And I don't know. It's the first things that I feel is always like, I'm glad they came to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was afraid that they go to someone else and then they are treated. They will be treated not well. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, and this is more like, but I didn't cry.
Yeah, because I mean, it was also not, it's not like someone called you and told you your best or like your good friend died. But I mean, we met with her in the summer and before that, and you were helping her.
Yeah.
Like,
and that's me, you were helping her
sort out things before she died. Like, she prepared everything with us. We do what she wanted. So it didn't come as a surprise.
I know, but still I am, like, now is still, we are in the process because, to tell the story, Tina, I met Tina like in the 90s, I guess, in Berlin. And she was never a real friend of mine, but she was like this people that, one of these people, those people that they belong to Berlin, kind of, yeah? As oh, like yeah. they, everyone knew Tina. Also, mm-hmm. if you're not a friend of Tina, ever, and she was grump, she was a very grumpy person. Mm-hmm. Always, all my life, I met Tina. She was a grumpy person, but there was always a chat and here and that, and then at some point, also grumpy people, when you know them and they know you for a long, long time, they are nice to you. They start yeah, to become yeah. nice to you. Yeah. And so, and I was very glad that Tina was this kind of person that everyone was afraid of. But to me, as she was like the famous bad dog that bite everyone. But for me, she was licking my hand.
Yeah, it makes you feel special, right? If those grumpy people yeah. that behave like assholes to everybody, but then they're nice to you.
So, and she was like a character in the street of Mitte of Berlin. And yeah. then... She was older than me always, and then she started to work in a coffee shop where I used now still now we are going to do the
yeah
how do you say
like we print our cards
yeah and oh, what do they like call the cards the
I don't
Trauerkarten.
No, I don't even know like the postcards we send or the cards that we send out to people with a picture of the deceased and like. Information about the funeral.
Yeah, so this card and but before I became a funeral director, I used to go there because I was a photographer and she was printing for me every time all these pictures to send it to some whatever exhibition that I wanted to take part or like how do you say competition, photography competition. So she was really like, and she was the grumpiest person in this shop. Every time.
I can totally see that.
You could see really like people trembling every time. As she was like a, like this. And you ask whatever, like, can I have a pen? Yeah, everyone is asking a pen. What are you also asshole? You know what? Tell me. So it's really like, and she got kicked out from.
Very Berlin. That sounds yeah. very Berlin.
No, it's like the bus driver in Berlin. Like yeah. the cliche of the bus driver. Like no one is really helping you. Everyone is grumpy and you have to like know everything because they don't serve your insecurity. So
no.
And so she had a very thin level of patience with customers. No. But she was treating me like every time, like really she made the, as she was such a great designer, as a printer, you say? I don't know. Yeah. No, it's not yeah, a printer. Like,
no, it is.
It's a printer?
Yeah.
So she was so good and fine in what she was doing. And when my movie was starting, she was printing all the DVD and she was really into that. And we had always fun. She was never my best friend, but at some point she got sick. No, she got kicked out from the coffee shop because she was too unfriendly. Amazing, right?
Yeah.
And I think, fuck, poor Tina, but she was unfriendly. So she was really unfriendly. So she was not making money for the coffee shop, but not to me. Anyway, and then I lost her for a long time, and then as I lost sight with her, and then I met her again, and she was always a kind of chubby girl mm-hmm. and a woman, and then she became very thin and she told me, yeah, she has cancer, blah blah, but she was always in a good mood and we always had dinner together in a restaurant, and then it started that I became the funeral director in her life, also a friend but the funeral mm-hmm, director mm-hmm. And of course, you know, Sarah, when you meet someone that is dying, you don't talk about friendship. You talk about the funeral, the arrangement.
No.
And she expressed this this desire of being as ash, as when she turned into ashes, to be to stay in the car and then McGonagall.
Yeah, I was there when she said that, because that was when we were talking about driving that person to Italy a year ago. And she was like, I want the same journey. That's so cool. That's such a nice last journey. But then she said that, she doesn't mind if it's just in Berlin. She wants to be driven around in the hearse for
in the Magnolia Mobile. In the Maggie Mobile, I call it. And because it was like before she died, I used to go to her, and she was like preparing all her clothes in boxes to give it to the Oxfam or the Salvation Army.
Yeah, so and I was you having, helped her with that.
So she knew the car and she loved the car. And now she's in my car, in the car, in the Magnolia car. And she has a safety belt. I don't know why. And we are driving. So she's there.
And whenever I get in the car, I say hi to her. And whenever I leave, I say goodbye.
So I kept my promise to her. But what struck me is the fact that also seeing her, I talked to her really like 2 days before she died about something. I call her to ask, how are you doing? She couldn't sleep, whatever. And I said, did the pills work out for you, the one that I gave you? Stuff like that. And then I was in the restaurant 2 days later, and then the son called me and said she died in the flat and we can't move her. And so I went from sushi restaurant into Tina's flat, and she was like dead. Alone in the flat, and the posture struck me a lot, how she died. She died in the middle of maybe like going from the cappuccino that she used to love to drink in the evening to the bed, and she died in between. She fell on her knees, and next to her bed was this chair for the people that visit her, and she had like the head on. She was like when you played hide and seek. She looked like that.
Okay.
And you do like your arm like that.
Cover your eyes with your hand and arm. Yeah.
It was very elegant how she was. So and.
Yeah, I only got there the day after when you had already put her in the bed. So I only saw her in the bed.
Yeah. And she stayed the same. But I don't know. Like still now. For me, she's the Tina now that in another dimension.
She's in another
structure. So
she has transformed to another type of existence, I guess.
Yeah, but it's very strange what I was thinking. The fact that now it's not because I'm a funeral director, but I can't find the line. I find myself not finding the line between my emotion and my job.
So dressing her and preparing her for the viewing did that feel different to you from any other case?
No.
I'm
so I'm kind of ashamed to say that.
Don't be, never be.
No, but this is like I don't know, I'm becoming maybe this person that understand the fact that people are dying, so and that scared me a little bit, I must say. In my head was this thought that I don't know, you didn't feel that because you didn't know her,
right.
How was it for you? I mean, you met her in life, you say it was the first time, but it was not a friend of yours. Was it like strange to see her like from life to now is dead, and now we have to do things that we have to do with like with everyone else?
To be honest, and now that I'm thinking and talking about it, I also kind of feel weird about it. For me, it was mostly interesting because I have not, except for my grandmother, had that experience that I had seen someone alive
and then
dead. Like usually I only see pictures of the person from when they were alive, and then I see them dead, and it's kind of sometimes hard to make a connection between those pictures and the person. So for me, it was interesting. Also, in that situation, I was kind of fine-tuned to you because I didn't know how you were feeling. And I kind of wanted to like be there in case you got very emotional because it was your friend, and you know?
Were you so not totally surprised?
I was so appalled. I thought you were really disgusting. No,
no,
no, not at all. You were
surprised.
You were very calm and friendly, and I just didn't. I wasn't sure if I just couldn't. If you were just like being very professional and like putting aside your emotions for the moment, or
no,
how
I don't
you
even
were
try.
Or how you were feeling. But I think that like handling the dead body of someone, kind of on a factual level doesn't mean that you're not feeling anything or not grieving that person. I think it might be a thing that comes with our line of work at some point, that it becomes this factual thing, that this is that the body is like matter that at some point loses like the electricity or whatever it is that keeps it going, and then it's like there's not much difference between one and the other at that point. And we've talked about this. I mean, we talk about that a lot, but we've also talked about this on the podcast before, that neither of us thinks that there's anything, that the body holds anything once the life has left it.
Exactly, yeah. I don't feel a thing.
Yeah,
I would say,
exactly.
When I see
the body there. Yeah, and you've said that before. Like that's the thing, and it's kind of the same for me. I don't know because I don't have the experience how it would be if it would be like my mom, who I've talked to about it, who really wants us to handle her and like do everything for her. So I don't know how that would be.
Yeah. When I did my father was the same, and I must say like. So I saw my father alive, then I saw him dead, and then I was dressing him and doing all, and then he was in the living room in Italy for 3 days, and we were talking to him, but we already talked about that, and as strange, or maybe because that I became a funeral director, sometimes I ask the reverse question. Because I understand that a body has to be treated somehow and kind of put it away because he can't stay there because he's rotting and so on. And to do that, because it was a life in it, we need a ritual. But it doesn't make me feel sad. I don't know. But it's not that I think I'm practical only. I see as a fact that life goes away, and Tina was the same. The only moment really that was like something in between that maybe I say quote normal people feel like when someone dies that they're really sad was seeing her in the flat. When I came in the flat and seeing her in this pose, alone in this flat, and to think like. This is a life with like a lot of emotion, up and downs. Tina had really difficult life because she was from the East German. Then her husband died
super early.
Super early.
So she was alone with a baby.
With a baby. Then the wall fell down. And I was thinking that. And then you see, I was not even thinking that. It was like seeing this little body sick, dead in the flat, in a simple position. Not done, you know, what we do, like in like a normal pose, that was sad. So people are dying alone in their flat and
it's these lives. And maybe once we have, like we get the people, they're completely like taken out of that context. In a lot of cases, they are even for us, we haven't had, like when I meet with people about a case for a eulogy, I learn a lot about the person. But at that point, we usually already have dressed that person and all of that. So when we get them and get to see them, we might not have even seen a picture of them. Or we might not know that much, and it's just completely out of context. It's not in their flat. it's a lot of times not in their clothes because we bring the clothes.
Yeah.
And does, like, is it maybe, I'm just thinking, is it maybe partly that because you kind of, like, the person is kind of detached from their life at that point, or the body that we get is already detached from that life. So once we have them on our table and dress them and get them ready, they are already transitioning and in like a different state than they were. So we don't really relate to like the humanity of it. And it's,
yeah, but this is when more the people, abstract. Yeah, when, also what I recognize also is like, sometimes it's happening that we are sitting in the kitchen of someone and that we didn't even pick up, also the let's say the disease is still in the hospital, but we are sitting in the kitchen already doing the formula in order to tomorrow, the day after, to pick up the body and have the farewell. And so, and then it's maybe on the fridge is a picture of the disease. Yeah, and I just spot the picture, and then the next day, there she is, the person. Yeah. And she doesn't look at all like the person in the picture, because in the death process, she start to suffer. So her body start to change, like the mouth or whatever. So they look like not happy people, like on the fridge, but they look very like kind of mistreated. Can I say that? Mistreated because I incubated, I guess, the tube went out, so the tongue was too big. And so they have a different expression on their face. But Tina had the same expression.
Like Tina, that's true. When I got there and saw her in her bed. Yeah.
And it was so the same person in her bed, just she was not moving at all. Like she was in a freeze. It was a Tina freeze. And then, I don't know, what make me sad a little bit, also I try to explain only, like, there are micro feeling that I have. And so when she was lying there alone in the flat, and I felt like this loneliness of a person that was not very sympathetic for many people, but she had a soul and she had a sense of humor. She had a life behind her. No one was listening to that, so they just was, they were seeing only this grumpy Tina, but she was very eloquent, very intelligent, and
and funny. She was funny.
And then seeing this little Tina dead in a flat on Sunday evening, so this picture would stuck forever, because I feel more sad that the life and in loneliness. This is maybe what made me sad. And then when when they pick her up, then they put her in a body bag, I felt like a little bit like this. Maybe it's the only different, like, asphyxiating. And so
that the whole, like, the zipper and the body bag thing just felt like, usually,
as if someone
don't really mind if but
because it was a friend, it was a tiny things that I felt. But at the end, I have my Tina in the car, we are listening to music, I talk to her, and I don't know, sometimes I ask myself, imagine my son die, and would I feel the same thing? I don't know. I'm afraid that I'm becoming through the death of friends, because the other Tina was the same. For me, she was like the Tina that I have to carry her in the grave. And she was special person and so on, but I was busy with her, treating her as a dead person.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel...
I think it's really, like, beautiful that, like, you and probably also I at some point, even though it also scares me, get to do these things, because it feels more natural that it's people that knew you that are the ones that are gonna do all these things to you, you know. And I also feel, especially from talking to my mom, that it can be a relief for someone if they know that it's not gonna be like your whatever cliche German funeral director, but
I don't know, someone knowing, that you don't know.
Knowing that, so I think the idea that in death you're going to be handled by someone who knew you in life is nice. And I also kind of hope that that's going to help with my own grief at some point. But I also, I'm now wondering if like the feeling of loss and grieving someone and the handling them as a funeral director, like how closely related are those even? Like just because you don't feel, just because like the handling of the actual physical remains of Tina and all of that feels more like a factual thing to you, which I think is not only because you're a funeral director. I think that like old Catholic ladies in Ireland, in Northern Ireland, are going to be the same, because that's just, people just die and that's what you do. You handle them, you have the wake, you know, all of that. Like, that doesn't mean that you don't grieve the person and don't like miss the person at some point, and that there's no emotion related to the loss. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe that's two different things.
Yeah, I don't know. I was just wondering and thinking like, yeah, interesting how I deal with a friend.
Yeah.
I was like, also when I talk to the son now with Oscar, it's like, for me, we are talking about Tina.
No.
As it's not, she's dead, she just finished to exist in, but I don't believe, you know, that I don't believe in life after death and so on. I don't believe in all this shit. Sorry. For the people, I don't want to say that it's stupid to believe in that, but I really don't believe in that. I believe in what you do here, and that's why it's important that you are here. So, or it's, and then, and talking with Oscar, I always talk to him like she's there.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see the dead when when I buried them. I don't know. I don't see. Yeah, I don't see. I don't grieve in that term, like grieving for a friend.
Okay. But I mean, was it different with like people that were closer to you? I mean, you have experience.
With my father was the same. Grief. That's what I saw. And then of course I miss my father, and I dream about him. Or Bruno was the same, the father of my son. Like also I saw him alive. I was with him. Then he died, and I saw him dead the next day. And it's like seeing a dead person doesn't make me feel grieving.
I don't think that's super unusual. Like that seeing, I don't think that seeing the dead person necessarily is a thing that, maybe it's quite the opposite, because there's also this cliche that's in movies and that like I know from distant family, like people actually do, like you have the coffin and the coffin is closed and it's the funeral and they're lowering the coffin in the grave and someone like throws themselves on it, you know, and holds on to it and goes like, no, don't let them go.
I experienced that.
You know, like very dramatic stuff like that. I think that's different though. I think it's a cultural thing, and it's also maybe a different thing, like letting someone go that way from actually seeing their mortal shell one last time and just realizing. I think sometimes it just strikes people. They see, they maybe even go in expecting to, for like a wave of grief to flow over them. And then they see the person and they realize how calm of a situation that is, and that it's a very factual thing.
So it's
like a dead body is just a very calm and cold and factual thing. It's just a thing
reality.
That's there. It's just reality.
More than that, the reality is, as a beyond that, is as a, this is the biggest reality you can have.
It's the biggest reality you can have. And it's also very simple and small and basic.
Yeah.
Because it's just,
just
the mortal shell of someone you used to know.
Yeah, yeah. It's a piece of meat.
Ew.
Kind of.
For someone, maybe. Go to cannibalism some other time.
No, but this is like, it's an object. I don't know. Let's say it's an object. Sounds very harsh to say that, but yeah, that person is more like an object. And what it's around, that's just make me sad.
Yeah, exactly.
Like when Oscar came to say goodbye to Tina, and he was standing there next to her, petting her. That makes me sad.
Yeah, exactly.
See.
Yeah.
The surrounding around, but when I was always Tina in the flat alone, it was the flat around her, like this small body in a big,
totally
messy,
that.
Messy place because she couldn't really move anymore, and she was determined to die at home.
Yeah.
She didn't want to go anywhere, and she was smoking until the very, very end. Also, she had lung cancer.
Yeah.
Because she say, fuck it, now I can smoke with no problem, I know it. So, and it was like...
That's how she was.
Yeah. She was like that.
And when you see the body, you don't see someone or something that's like how Tina was. You see Tina in the flat, you see Tina in her son and the way he handles the situation. You don't really see her in that body because it's just the shell. It's not... her, right? But then also I feel like the grieving like over the dead body is a very cultural thing, and I feel like because we have so many people that are very shy about it and don't know if they want to do it, and then we encourage them and we have a viewing and they go in, and it's this what I described before, like this very factual, calm thing. But then also sometimes, and it's definitely a thing of cultural difference, I'm going to say, we've had cases where there was a lot of screaming, shouting, loud crying, like pulling of the hair, throwing on the chest of the dead body.
No, she was not Italian. She was
Albanian,
Albanian,
I think. More southeast European, more Catholic,
more traditional.
Kind of, maybe there's this whole vocabulary of what you do, and I mean, I don't even know from an outside perspective how much that has to do with genuine feelings the people have, or if that also triggers feelings that can be cathartic and helpful, you know. But I just noticed that it's very different, that like if we have more like Germanish people, let's say, that they are reluctant to do it, to like go in and to face the situation with the body, and then when they do, they are thankful and they're a lot of times surprised how kind of easy in the end it was, and that they did not get completely swept away by feelings, and they felt like that was the right thing. But then when we have those cases with people that have their whole cultural vocabulary of like grieving and screaming and wailing, and that also helps them a lot. I think it's super interesting. There's just no universal answer to how to react and what to do and what is right, you know, and it has so many.
I think also it doesn't aspects. Have to do with right and wrong, but it has to do I agree. It's like it's often tradition. Like if you see, I remember these Russian people. I already talked about that. I don't know if they were Russian or something or Romanian. They were like screaming and kissing the coffin, and and of course, it's like music, no? You start to open a little door to emotion, and then you need to open just a little door in a funeral.
Yeah,
like if it's through music or through a word said and so on, and then start to flow the emotion, like crying, for instance. A lot of people don't cry immediately, but then you put the music on and then they start to cry. And then comes the guy that take the urn out of the chapel. And then they start, because the music in the back, they start to think, oh God, she's dead. No, so, and then they start to cry. Other people, they know they have to cry at the funeral.
Yeah.
They instinctively know this is a sad situation. And so they walk behind the coffin going like, oh, like this, and then creating this energy of sadness that maybe wasn't there. It's just because they know this is a sad moment.
Yeah, and then there's also that profession, right? Like the wailing women. That's also still a thing in parts of the world.
Yeah, where to make everything more passionate and emotional. And Oh God!
Like outsource your crying and wailing. It's super weird to me.
I'm waiting the moment that I lost.
That you lose it.
That I lose it completely, and I will. I wonder about me. Yeah. What will be the moment?
Okay, because you do feel like you're penning things up.
Yeah, kind of. I don't want it, but as I become this like clinical. Sometimes I feel like I'm so clinical. Yeah, this is the fact. People are alive, then they are dying, and I take care from them. And then I put the book in a coffin, and now there are ashes in my car. So it's so obvious and normal. I mean, to have them in my car for some other people is completely like, what crazy, is this crazy woman?
Yeah.
And so maybe I'm totally normal.
Yeah, I was going to say, like that. So either you've got like the healthiest relationship one can have with all of that, or at some point your eye is going to start twitching and then you're just going to...
Yeah, exactly. And I go totally
oh my God.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah. And so I have thought like every time I go to bed that I have like a night t-shirt and so on, because maybe I die in the bed and I don't want people finding me like with the bed t-shirt.
Yeah. So that's cute.
So it's all there in my head that is completely present.
Yeah.
And so I hope I will not talk like, yeah, everyone dies. This is the fact. Fuck it. Why are you crying there? You will die too. I don't want to become this person.
Maybe I mean,
20
sometimes,
podcasts later.
Sometimes, I mean, you kind of, I don't know, like need the right moment for that, like between Christmas and New Year's, like last year, last month, I had this, because as you don't know, listeners probably, hopefully, but you know, like I have a friend who's probably not going to live for that long, and I had completely just like pushed that aside and try to be like super practical and factual about it. But then my partner and I got kind of drunk between Christmas and New Year, and we had this conversation about my friend who committed suicide when we were 26 and about like things like that. And also about Tina, like all these things that that were just happening. And then suddenly like it happened for me, and I ended up from like 1 minute to the next, I'm like sitting there drinking a glass of wine. And then I'm like on my knees with my head in Robert's lap, just ugly crying. And I couldn't stop.
You were drunk. I think this
So that's like, I don't know.
Okay.
If you feel like you need to let it out,
get drunk and think
really sad thoughts, and then maybe it'll come out.
I know. I cry every time when I think I repeat myself because I don't remember what I say before. But the moment that I really get emotional is always when a baby is born.
Okay.
In the movie.
Yeah.
Like whatever. What movie? Doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be a good movie. But to have like, oh my God, the baby's coming. Quick. Yeah. And then I cry. Then I'm so crying, like really like. where my emotion works completely. Or when did I cry the last time? I cry. I don't remember. I mean, I cry for stuff like that or for romantic shit sometimes. And I'm not, I wouldn't say about me I'm a romantic person, or I wouldn't say about me I'm a totally pragmatic person.
No, but you have a soft spot in movies for like romantic.
Yeah, but no, I don't watch romantic movie I watch more wars movies.
Says the person that just told me that she was on a Hallmark movie bender.
Oh yeah. I have oops. What's up? No, really. Yeah. I have my phase of stupidity. It's true. I switch between war movies and totally romantic shit, and then mafia process. But yeah, this is behind the point. Yes. So, Tina, I just want to say a few words about Tina. I was so glad that I have met her, and I'm proud kind of this encounter, because she was not a person that I would have choose, but we met because history made us meeting. Yeah. And then I'm very...
She was there for a lot of your Berlin life.
Yes. And then she was the only person, friend, and this is sad, that come from the East, mm-hmm. was erased and was born and raised. After that, she was erased, of course, because the East doesn't exist anymore. And this is another long conversation I can start that I stop immediately. Yeah, so I'm happy that I met her, as I had this person really that came from this part of Germany that was erased. and as a different character, yeah? And so, and then I'm proud that we had few moments that were different than the normal life because she was dying. Mm-hmm. So that makes possible to a different conversation, even though we didn't talk about that in this. But she was kind of peaceful with me, and she was always kissing me from the balcony every time I say goodbye. And I took some package with the old clothes that I gave to the Oxfam and Salvation Army. So it's, and then I'm very proud that she made it and wishes to, as she made it to die at home like she was wishing. So and then I'm proud of her that she did it in such like natural manner. Like she was never, she stayed the same person, very grumpy and complaining.
Yeah, she was not fake.
Not at all. She was just like...
She definitely wasn't. She was very authentic and like being herself.
She was herself, and she was so much herself that some people get annoyed of her. But and then I'm proud at the end, or happy at the end, that she's in my car as I promised that I kept a promise, which maybe not everyone can keep, because I'm a funeral director, so I can keep the ashes and not so I can as I made her, so I kept the promise. So and so she's in the car and she's listening a lot of music. So that's so goodbye Tina.
Goodbye Tina. There's not much more to say. I wouldn't say that I'm also grateful to have met her. And for the trust.
And how much trust she put in. That's just another thing that we can talk next time. But because the trust is a big issue.
It is, yeah. It's kind of overwhelming sometimes how much people.
It's like feeling Jesus sometimes.
Okay. All right. So, Tina, goodbye.
Yeah. Goodbye. And now we are driving to Dahlem with Tina.
Oh yeah,
because we have to go to
plan the next funeral.
Plan the next funeral. Yeah. So.
All right. This was this week's worst case scenario. Let's leave with a big and loving goodbye for Tina.
Yeah. Bye.